This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors that have been passed on to you from generations past and from our dominant culture and start parenting with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Kelly Nault, and we talk about the misbehavior that our kids have that is actually the solution to our problems. Welcome to the show, Jessica Frew. Jessica is a mom, wife, ex-wife, stepmom, and bold action taker. She has a successful podcast called Husband in Law that she records with her husband, Matt, and her ex-husband, Steve. Together, they are sharing their stories of love, marriage, coming out, divorce, remarriage, and co-parenting to help others know they are not alone. They also co-own The Bold Logic, a company devoted to helping people go from living in an I should mindset to taking bold action. Jessica is a firm believer that by knowing and understanding what it is you really want in life, you can boldly create a life you love, no matter what your circumstances. Welcome, Jessica. I love that introduction.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited because, you know, that whole idea of boldly creating a life, that's what, to me, living in an intentional family culture is really all about. Takes some kind of risk. It takes some level of risk to be able to live boldly and to live with intention. It takes, that intentionality can be scary, right? do things that are different or questioning the status quo. So thanks for being here. I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So my icebreaker question is, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh man. I mean, always in the forefront was I wanted to be a mom. Like I just wanted to be. And it's funny because I didn't really like kids growing up. And even as an adult, like my natural, I'm not drawn to kids, but I always wanted to be a mom. And maybe that's just because I loved and adored my mom and I wanted to do as she did. I know I bounced around being a teacher. And ultimately what I remember is I decided that if I couldn't be a mom, I wanted to be on Broadway. Nice. So maybe that's Broadway might've been the real thing that I wanted deep down under all of those layers.
I'm going to have to might have to circle back to that, but how did that shape who you've become?
It probably led me to understand that I could create a life I love. Like, you know, well, if this is what I really wanted, maybe I could make all these things work depending how it works out, or being open to the idea that, you know, because I had in my mindset that if I couldn't be a mom, if for some reason I couldn't be, then I had other options. So I wasn't just set in this, well, I should be a mom. So that's what I'm going to be, no matter how that looks. But instead, there were options available to me, no matter how my life went.
I love that so much because, I think that growing up for me, being a mom was almost something that was like fed to you as that was the narrative, that was the construct. And a lot of it does come back to the faith that we share, that yes. There's a lot in the culture of our church that is very much about being a mother. And mm-hmm. So I think that that's really amazing that in the back of your mind, you still knew that, look, that's not always going to be available to me and that's okay. And in fact, it's like, I almost feel like now looking back, I feel like pursue that thing in the back of your head. And if you happen to become a mother, bonus, right?
Yeah. Figure it out.
Exactly. So I just think that there's so many people who struggle with all the levels of the struggles with motherhood that, you know, whether it's going from people who struggle with infertility to people who a whole end of the spectrum, people needing to adopt or whatever. It's just like, it's so hard. It's so hard when that's the narrative of the construct that is so heavy on your culture, then it becomes so devastating if that's just not in the cards for you. So,
yeah. And even within that, once you become a mom, sometimes you realize that that's not as satisfying or not satisfying, what's the right word? Fulfilling as you would have hoped. And so there's this like, okay, this is what I've always wanted, but I'm not feeling fulfilled. And so then finding yourself again within that realm of motherhood is something we don't talk about enough. And, yes. and it's real and it's natural. And that's okay to want more or to, you know, find yourself outside of that as well.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That's yeah. like, you're preaching to the choir here. Well, I mean, not to diminish. It's so hard when we talk about that because it's like, I don't want to diminish motherhood. And I don't want anybody to feel like, oh, if you only want to be a mother, then you're like soulless or something. I don't know. Yeah. Like, well, and, you know, it's
I
so
mean, that's
hard.
Been my life for years. And that's all I wanted. My husband used to always ask me, well, my current husband would always be like, well, what else do you want to do? What else do you want to do? I'm like, I am happy. Like, I am so content in this role of motherhood. And there's nothing else I want right now. And that changed a couple of years ago. And even within that, sometimes I think maybe I should just go back to that piece and that, you know, that I felt there. But no, I love being a mom, and there's nothing more important in my life than that role, mm-hmm. Besides taking care of myself. But when it comes down to it, when push comes to shove, that's where my loyalty lies. And I admire women who are, that's what they do. Like, it's so amazing to see mothers. Like, it's just yeah. always amazing to me to see the different types of moms and the different ways we show up. So yeah, no, it's... Yeah.
That we all support each other on whatever level or
yes. You know.
Anyway, thank you for that tangent. That's I love being able to talk about those kinds of things and the different perspectives. So
yeah.
So now that you are in this situation, you have a podcast, you're your second marriage, beautiful, loving listening to your podcast. So tell us, thanks. What was the pivotal experience that brought you to this point? Tell us about it.
So when I was thinking about that question, I thought, okay, the pivotal thing for me in my life was really when I found a whole bunch of gay pornography on my first husband's computer. And I was just going to get on the internet to search for something, and all of this gay porn shows up. And while I knew he looked at porn, I didn't know it was gay porn. And it totally changed how I had to think about my relationship, how I had to think about my life. Because I knew in that moment that it wasn't going to be the marriage I imagined. It wasn't going to be the life I imagined. And so I had to become okay with thinking about that and trying to decide where I stood and how I showed up to life with this new knowledge. And so I really feel like that is where my life changed. And it didn't immediately change. I mean, I stayed married to him for another 6.5 years after I found the gay porn. But it has changed the trajectory of my life significantly. That one, and it really was, I feel like, just this moment of, oh my gosh, what am I looking at here? And what does this mean for me and my relationship and all of the things? So,
wow. Yeah. So did you address it with him? Like, what did it do to your relationship at that point?
Yeah. So I mean, he came home from work and we were living across the country, so we weren't by any family or anything. And so it was just us. Like, it really forced us to come together. And we knew each other well, even 6 months into our marriage, which is what this was. We knew each other well enough that when he walked in the door, he knew something was wrong. And automatically he knew what it was because he felt guilt around that and shame around that. And so he knew right what had happened. And we had a conversation and I said, well, are you gay? Like, I remember asking him in that conversation, and he was still in denial at that point. He was still very much like, no, I'm not gay. I just felt it was better. This is how he justified it, to look at women or to look at men than to look at women. So I'm not disrespecting women. And this is the narrative he had fed himself for years since he was a little kid, so that he didn't have to deal with the reality that he was gay. And growing up in a very conservative religion, that was very hard for him to accept and love about himself. And we were happy. Like, we had a great marriage. And so I was like, okay, well, if that's why you're looking at gay porn, then that's why. And, you know, I'm good to continue forward. And then about a year later, he did come to terms with the fact that he was gay, and we had a whole nother conversation, but still continued to stay married and all of those things. So yeah, it was definitely a time where we had to process what our relationship looked like. And I mean, when he came to terms with the fact he was gay, we were trying to have a daughter and in the middle of fertility treatments and all of these things. And so it was just like, okay, I guess are we just continuing forward? And neither of us wanted to end that relationship. We were happy together. We had fun together. We, all of the things that you want in a relationship. And so we just continued. And I continued forward with the knowledge that, you know what, someday he very well may want to explore this side of himself. He might want to live authentic to this gay side of himself. And I accepted that. that my marriage could end divorce. And not that it made it easier when it happened, but it was the reality that I accept and owned when it came time that he decided to go live that life.
Is that what ultimately is what made the decision? Is that he wanted to be authentic in his feelings?
Yeah. We had had a lot of support and help in staying in a mixed orientation marriage. And we made a move that physical move that kind of dropped all of that support all at once and threw him into a very high stress job and all of these things like just coming at us. And it was just too much. And he ended up having an affair when I was out of town one weekend, and opened up to me about that within the week of me being home. And we tried to stay together after that, but it was so different. And he didn't physically want me anymore. He wasn't attracted to me. And that for me was so hard to deal with. And then he was just so confused about what he really wanted at that point. And so we ultimately decided to separate.
Wow. That's an incredible story. And I just want to acknowledge like both of you so brave to support each other and just to learn what it is that you both could live more, authentically, really.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And before we move on to the next part of the conversation, I wanted to go back and address, you said that you knew that he was looking at pornography. Can you give some of us advice for what to do if we find out that our spouse is looking at pornography, because it's such a taboo conversation. And often, and I know about marriages who have broken up just because they found out that their spouse was looking at pornography. And so what is your advice?
Okay. So my take on pornography is it is very damaging to a relationship. Now, that being said, there are different levels of pornography use and abuse, and that looks different for everybody. So just the fact that somebody is looking at pornography can mean so many different things on so many different levels. There is an extent where it can come back and become abuse on the spouse or partner. And that's where the issue really comes in. It damages your physical relationship. It can be damaging to the person, abusive to the other person, just because there's a fantasy that's built up of how sex should be and how we should be engaging that isn't real or realistic, and they can't separate those two. So there is that aspect of it that I do not want to negate or undermine. Like, it's so important to recognize that is real. And if that is real, that's ideally when you need to leave. There is this also idea though, that I was married to this man and he told me before we got married that he looked at pornography and that he struggled with that. And I remember when he told me that, I could see how much shame he carried around that. And we had a very open conversation. And I just remember my heart being softened to him in that moment, which was a gift that I was given. And I know it was a gift that was given to him too, because I realized I don't want him to feel more shame. I don't want him to just think this is who he is. Like, this isn't all of who this man is. He's a great man. He makes me so happy. Like, he treats me so well. And we have such great connection and all of these things. He's showing up for other people. He wants to help other people. He's genuinely concerned. He's happy. He's fun. Like, all of these things. This was just a small part of who he was. And I really encourage people to stop focusing in on this one small part and don't try to control that part of them. They have to be the ones to deal with it and to understand how they want to deal with it. You trying to control it isn't going to help them. It's not going to help you. It's going to make it worse. So I think really when you can show up in empathy and understanding of, hey, I see this is so hard for you, and help them take the shame away. Because when you can get them to take the shame away, they're willing to communicate with you about it. And that's what's so damaging for most of us, especially as women, is we create this story of what they must think about us or what they're thinking about. Or if they're looking at pornography, they're probably out doing this. And it creates this whole horrible cycle. Whereas if our spouse or our partner feels like they can be open with us in that moment of, hey, this is what I am struggling with, this is what's going on, so we know we can have an open conversation and be real about it and understand what it is we can handle as the spouse partner and what they can handle, on the other end. So I really feel like if you can create a space where you can have those conversations, it changes everything.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, if you've read anything from like Brené Brown or something, then, you know, like connection is the antidote to shame, and shame is what people use to hide what they're afraid of. And so don't let the shame is never going to change anybody's behavior. It's just,
doesn't.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And I really think that a lot of times, like when you're talking about that, it's like, well, everybody has a vice. Everybody has their pet sin, if you want to call it that, you know, or something. Yeah. You know, everybody has like their thing that they kind of are ashamed of or regret or feel that guilt over. And it's like, I especially feel like in a marriage, if your spouse is throwing shame at you, then that just turns into a toxic situation more so than the actual vice itself. So
100%. 100%. And that's what, I mean, me being able to have these conversations with Steve and not taking them on myself as this is my issue and I'm not pretty enough or whatever, all those things that are so natural and so real to take on when your spouse has a pornography issue. When you can set that aside though, then it gives them space to communicate with you. And that's what led Steve being okay to telling me that he was gay and being able to have this open conversation about it, which I'm so grateful because I was able to support him through that and understand what am I really okay with? Am I okay staying in this marriage knowing my husband is gay? Or is this when I need to walk away for my own well-being?
Well, it's so interesting that you address it that way too, because it's like, even though you're in this partnership, you're each on an individual journey.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love that so much. That's so cool. Okay, so the thing I like to talk about on my show is culture in general, right? And like generally accepted norms and narratives and things that are going on around in our society and throughout generations that keep getting passed on. And so I like to address the things that are kind of dysfunctional so that we can find a solution. Okay. So what is the dysfunctional belief or behavior of our dominant culture that you want to address?
So the one that I've really thought about is the idea that if we get divorced, we have failed. And while this encompasses a lot of my story in living in a mixed orientation marriage that was very taboo, and then in still being active in my conservative religion, while being friends with my gay ex-husband is almost taboo as well. Like that's not really seen as normal. People don't understand it. And so I really feel like there's this idea that when you get divorced, first of all, it's a failure. And secondly, it's not what you're supposed to do. That's not what you're supposed to do. You should have made this work. You should have tried harder. You need to stay in this marriage until you're broken. Right. And I don't buy into that rhetoric. And I believe that you can, outside of divorce, continue to create a family with this person that is beautiful, that works for you, that enables you to still have a life that you love and that your children get to have a stable upbringing. And maybe that's where the fight to stay together comes so strong, is when you do have kids, that you feel like, okay, I have to stay in this for my kids. And I think that is a lie that we tell ourselves. Because often when you're not in a marriage that is working, to be able to leave, you can make it work in a functional manner, in a way that is functioning and real and healthier for this child. So they know what to expect.
Do you think that that's because people just don't have a lot of good examples of people modeling what a healthy divorce looks like?
Yes.
What else do you think is going on that keeps people stuck in this dysfunctional belief?
So for me personally, when I was going through my divorce, I remember coming to the terms with the fact that we were getting divorced, like thinking, okay, this is real. Like we are really getting a divorce. And what is my fear in getting a divorce? Like what are my fears wrapped around that? And what it came down to at the base of it for me was, I don't want to be the family where I'm dropping off my daughter in the morning to school, and then my ex has to pick her up after school, and we can't be in the same room together. I do not want her to go through life at her birthdays and her wedding and her graduation feeling all of the stress around her parents not being able to be in the same room. Like to me, that would have been the sadness. And I want to make this clear, like we have this on the other side with my husband's ex. So we see both these sides very clearly and understand that sometimes that is absolutely how it has to work. Like, and not that you have to carry the stress and the tension, but you need to set up a lot of boundaries and strict boundaries. So I'm not saying that this is for everybody, but for me in that moment, I realized my divorce didn't have to look like I had seen everybody else's divorce look, right? I had seen this one version of divorce, not personally in my life, but friends, family, church members, whoever. And I didn't have to have that. I could go in and say, okay, so what is most important for me to keep in this relationship? What are the things that I want to keep intact for myself and for my daughter? And really designing that, going out of that. So I think when we can start changing that rhetoric, that dialogue around that, you know, this is how divorce looks. It's just the reality. We can start empowering people to show up better for themselves, to live a better life instead of staying married for the kids and putting kids through horrible situations within marriage, let alone divorce. And I'm not encouraging people to get divorced. If you can keep your family intact, keep your family intact. But I am saying it is an option that we sometimes wait too long to embrace.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I want to address is like, so because, you know, marriage is so important to stay together. And there's always this statistic that's like, oh, 50% of marriages end in divorce. And you should, it's so sad. It's so sad. And it's like, yeah, it is sad. But at the same time, like, okay, how do I want to phrase this question? Because I'm just kind of like, I mean, because I've had this conversation recently with another guest where it was like, divorce can be a good thing. And we, in fact, it's not healthy to maintain the narrative that it's bad if you are in an unhealthy relationship.
Yes. Yeah. And then thinking of,
yeah,
like when I was going to go ahead, I had a thought there and I just lost it.
Oh, sorry.
You're good. It wasn't your fault.
Well, because I just, it's like this hard balance between like, you never wanted to get into that situation in the first place, but then you find yourself in that situation. So you need to maturely as adults come together to a kind of an agreement. Right. And then the other side of this is, you know, when it ends so ugly, I almost think that that's because, I mean, some things are just ugly if they're unhealthy. Right. And anyways, but I almost think sometimes some people need to like justify the divorce by making it as ugly as they can.
100% I think that we feel like we need to, there has to be something so horrible that's going on to justify this divorce, when often I feel like we stay and we are losing who we are. And that is enough. Like not feeling like you can't be yourself in a marriage, feeling like you can't show up how you genuinely want to show up is enough reason to leave a marriage, because that is, I mean, that's mild abuse. That's like, you know, forms of abuse, of not being able to be who you are, of not feeling like you have a voice in your life like that. And I come back to it is, would you want your child to stay in a relationship where they feel this way? Would you want them to just put up with living this life that you are? Or would you want them to go and find a way to be happy? Would you want them to find a way to set themselves free, to embrace who they are? And that's really the way I think of it is, okay, like I would never encourage my daughter to stay in a relationship where she was feeling that she couldn't be true to who she was, where she was being beat down. And that doesn't mean that we don't change and develop and grow within our relationships. We should, like, that's important. But if you are feeling oppressed and like you can't speak up for yourself, or you just have lost completely who you are because you're in a codependent relationship, like there doesn't have to be real abuse. It doesn't have to be so horrible like you hear about to justify your divorce.
Okay. So because my podcast is generally about trying to keep families together, right?
Yes.
let's address then, how do you create the kind of relationship that you do feel supported? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you're in a relationship where you feel codependent, where you feel like you can't express yourself, that you're feeling oppressed, how do you address that?
Okay. So I am of the mindset that you have to dive in to figure out and know what it is you want. So that is the first thing you need to know. What is it that you want? And what is it that's keeping you from getting that? More often than not, it's us not willing to just protect what it is we want. We're not willing to put boundaries around our voice because we feel like, oh, we're supposed to be completely open. We're supposed to just give everything to this other person and to our families, when really we have to find a way to protect who we are. And I felt this so strongly when I got remarried, of I was thrown into being a stepmom and a mom, you know, like all of the things, and working with my husband's ex, and then trying to make sure I'm navigating this new relationship with my husband and my ex-husband. And I was losing myself. I was 100% just giving, giving, giving. And at some point I was so bitter and so angry, and justifiably so. Like, there were things that were not, like, things were not okay. But I also recognize that, you know what? I was just as much blamed because I wasn't setting boundaries around things. I was just trying to make everybody happy. I was just trying to smooth everything over. I was just trying to do all these things. And so I left at one point. I was like, I am done. I cannot stay in this marriage. I love this man and I want to be with him, but I can't keep doing this. And I really had to think, okay, so how does this look for me going back? If I'm going to go back to this, I can't change him. I can't change his ex. I can't change his kids. I can be an influence for good. I can speak my mind, but I have to be willing to do that. And I have to know what it is I want out of this. And I have to be willing to protect it. Now, if he's not willing to come around to the boundaries I'm setting up and to the protection I'm putting in place, then that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like you have to give them grace, a little bit of time in doing that, because it is hard to adjust to new boundaries and all of that, but you should be able to start putting those boundaries in place. And that is when there is this healthy relationship, when you can say, hey, I'm feeling this way. You know, and I feel like this might help me. And so I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to start protecting this part of me. And I hope you can understand and help me do that. I think that's where the strength starts coming. And then as you start taking those little steps, because you know what it is you want towards getting there, you get to start feeling like, oh, okay, he is supporting me in this. They are supporting me as I'm doing these things. I'm going to step out and do this next thing. I'm going to move forward towards this other thing to protect myself and what it is I want, and keep moving forward. And then down the road, you've got a very healthy relationship where you can go back to opening up about all of the things and letting some of those boundaries down. But I really feel like we go into relationships when, like, there aren't any boundaries. We're married. There are, yeah. And that's okay. And as you trust more, as you get more secure in the relationship, then you can start reevaluating those boundaries and changing them.
I love that. Cause there's so often, you know, especially, I'm in homeschool communities, I'm in entrepreneurial communities, you know, and it's like, what do I do when my husband's not on board? What do I do? And blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, you don't need his permission.
No.
You know? And, but that's a tricky line to walk, right? Is like, yes. Okay, if he's not approving, quote unquote,
yep.
Well, then you got to address that, not the issue, yes, of what you're doing and what you want to accomplish. You exactly need to address the fact that he is putting down his foot saying, no, I don't think you should do this.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's the problem. There's the problem.
Yes.
Not that you,
yes,
want to homeschool, or that you want to be an entrepreneur, or whatever else you want to do.
Yeah.
But you have to, it has to go both ways too. And that's, I think, what, mm-hmm, is also tricky. But like we said early on, is that marriage is a united effort, but it's also an individual effort that,
yes,
you're in as individuals.
Yes.
That's a powerful thing to remember.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's so one good. Of the, one of the things I really teach is that you need to be bold in showing up for yourself. You need to be bold in understanding who you are and what it is you want, so you can understand how you fit in this context of marriage and the context of your relationships. And be open to rethinking up different ways to get to where you want to be. Like, there are many ways to get to where you want to go. Maybe the one you tried the first time didn't feel right to your spouse or to both of you. And so, but maybe there's still a way to get there to make it work. And go through those avenues, try and figure those things out. Don't just give up who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Experiment and go, yeah, with trial and error. And I think, so what I hear also is what you're saying, that sometimes I think some people hear like bells going off and they're like, oh, I don't want to set more boundaries because that's just asking for conflict. And that's just asking for us to end our marriage eventually. Right. Yeah. And so what is your advice for those people? Like, if you have any more thoughts about people who are just feeling like, is it just because we're so conditioned to just be selfless, quote unquote, and that is like some badge of virtue or something, that you are selfless?
It is so ingrained in us that our worth revolves around how much we're giving to other people, mm-hmm. and that's all that matters. And what it comes down to is you can't fully give to somebody else, and people will fight us for days, but it is so true. You can't fully give to somebody else unless you are taking care of yourself first. And I was actually just thinking about this a lot this morning as I was listening to some motivational talks and things, of this idea that they're saying, well, and all of them, they say you need to serve, you need to give and stuff. But before they say that, we focus in on that little part that we need to be giving and serving and stuff. Every time they said that, they talked about taking care of yourself first. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, we don't hear that part. We don't listen to that part. We go straight to I have to give more. I need to give more so that I'm worthy, so that I'm qualified, so that I'm of worth to this other person. That's not true. You need to go back and be who you are. And here's the other thing. The more you embrace who you are, the more you show up authentically to your relationship, to your life, the more people are attracted and connected to you. You are attracting the people that need you. You are attracting the people that you can serve, that you can help, because they see you being who that you are, and they want that. They want to be able to be real. They want to be them true selves. And so the more you embrace that, the more you invite others in, the more you're able to serve them in a real, genuine way.
Yeah. I don't see this part of me becoming more authentic as separate from my ability to show up as a wife, yeah. to my husband and to my children. Right. Yeah. Like, I just feel like this is all part of all of the big pack, the whole package. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's a powerful thing to be able to recognize. Like, this is just more of who I am, and I need to be able to show up for me in order to be able to show up for them. And so that's so important. That's so important. So just briefly, if you don't mind, I know before we got on this, this interview, we were like, we don't want to talk too much about religion in our church. Okay. But I just feel like, because divorce is just so, so, so taboo in any faith-based community. Right. And I guess I kind of want to address like that narrative around divorce and it being like so connected to our salvation.
Yes.
Right. And so that's something that I think is another reason why this narrative stays so ingrained in especially faith-based marriages, right? Yeah. That we feel like it's so much coupled with our salvation or exaltation, if you can call that. Right. Yep. So can we address that for just a second?
Oh, and for sure.
Because the more that I am, I just, over the last couple of years, I found myself becoming more and more sympathetic of just diverse situations, because I just, there's no one size fits all package of in life. Okay. And so I just more and more, I'm like, actually, I think that the more rigid we become, the more less Christ-like we become.
Yes.
So
yes.
I'm just kind of like, every time there's, for lack of a better term, like hate speech and things like that around the different trials and things people are going through, or any kind of judgment, I just feel very strongly that there's judgment does not have any place in a healthy relationship, and not, especially not in a church of Christ. I just believe that so strongly. And yet there's a lot of it going on in our community.
100%.
And so that's something that I really, have started to really struggle with, because I just like, guys, you're actually being super not Christ-like, because you've ostracized that family that's struggling. They need more love and embrace, not less. Okay. So I'm not sure where I'm going with this yet, Jessica, but I really want to address it with you, because you've gone through a divorce within the church. And on top of that, your husband is gay. So it's just like all of these things. That's like the trifecta of pornography, gay, and divorce. Like, like ostracized in the church. Right. And so, what is your advice about that? Like, what can we do? Maybe first I want to address, you know, what can we do to, still be inclusive and kind to people who are going through these, this kind of a trial.
Okay. So one of the things that came to mind as you were talking is if you are wanting to reach out to somebody who's going through this kind of a trial, do it without your judgments attached. Don't make this about you. Don't make this about religion. Don't make it about any of those things. Instead, reach out in genuine love. People can tell the difference. And when you do it in genuine love, it is received and accepted and it draws people closer to you. And I honestly think about this in my relationship with my ex-husband because I want to keep him close. Like we live completely different lifestyles, totally different. And yet he tells me everything. I know so much about his life that I should not know. And I love it because first of all, I know he trusts me and I know that he feels loved because he's willing to tell me those things. He feels safe in telling me those things because he knows I am not judging him for them, but instead I am a sounding board for him to remind him, well, what is it you really want out of this situation? What's really important to you in life? Is this really where you want to go? Yet he knows I don't agree with his decisions. And I feel like that is applicable to every situation. Like if you want your children to come to you when they have done something that maybe they know isn't right, maybe something you don't agree with, show them you love them. Don't react out of how it affects you or how you feel. Understand them. See how they are feeling instead of showing up in judgment. They know you don't agree. They don't need to be told that. They need to know that they are still of worth. We don't need any more shame and guilt. People who are going through a divorce, they already feel that shame and guilt. And why? Like, why should they feel that? Because things didn't work out because somebody in the marriage chose a different path. That's usually what happens, right? Like this person decided to go a different direction. My husband's ex-wife cheated on him numerous times. And yet he came back and said, I will stay with you. We can work this out. And she still chose to leave. Like that wasn't his decision. And so I feel like you can't judge the situation and you most likely do not know all of the details. Yeah. Like you do not know how long they've been going through this. You do not know how long they've been struggling. So don't make a snap judgment of that. And it's like, I mean, when Steve and I got divorced, the only person in our families that knew Steve was gay was his mom. And so nobody else in our family knew that for 6.5 years, we had been addressing this issue and working through it and trying to figure out how it worked for us. Instead, all they saw was this immediate, Steve's gay, he had an affair, we're getting divorced, you know? And what? Like,
wow. Sounds lonely though. Like,
yes,
that's hard.
Yeah. And so, there's a lot of, you know, people are, and in my divorce, I felt like I was constantly having to catch people up to where we were. Like I mourned, I did mourn, but there was still in that mourning process of helping other people along to catch up to where we were, of understanding those things. So be sensitive to that these people need to have this time to mourn and to grieve this loss without your judgments. And you're exactly right. Christ would not be judging you for getting a divorce. Christ would be embracing you and loving you through that time and telling you it's going to be okay. Like you can find yourself again. Like this is all right. He's not there to condemn you in that moment. I truly believe we get lost in that feeling like, oh, well, we're judging this person. No, that's not what we're here to do. We're here to love them and to help them feel some hope to stay in the path that they want to go in, to be good people. But it's when we get sucked into that shame and guilt of our circumstances that we don't see a way out. We don't see how we are good people. We lose that insight. And so it's really important to leave the judgment at the door, show up with love and embrace these people and help them keep going.
Awesome. Yeah. I just feel more and more like the more, you know, this path that each of us are on for our individual salvation is that just that, it's individual. And I almost think that a lot of the things that we go through, the trials that we go through, those are exactly what we need for our individual journey to find that salvation, right?
Yes.
And it's like, you don't know, somebody who's going through a traumatic experience may be actually really close to Christ, more so than somebody who's just kind of, it's like the prodigal son, right? It's like that prodigal son came back and felt even closer to his dad than the son who was there the whole time.
Yeah.
And so it's just very powerful. You can't judge the situation. You just can't. No. You don't know how they are connecting and establishing their personal relationship with Christ.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I watched Z firsthand fight to live the life he should live, to live in this reality of what he'd been taught. And I mean, I watched him cry and break down and beat himself up for being him. And it gave me a whole new understanding of what people are going through and a whole new way of looking at people, because I loved this man. And I still love him. He's like a brother to me. And he is such a good guy. And I just wanted him to see that this doesn't change who you are. This doesn't just automatically, like, I can't grasp that believing in a God who is going to write off all of these other amazing qualities, write off who he is because he's gay. And I'm like, no, that's who he is created to be. There's more to this than we understand.
Yes.
Like, he's not a bad guy because he's gay. Like, that's just not, it doesn't work.
No, 100%. I think too, like, for me personally, I mean, I have no idea what the afterlife is going to be like, but if you've ever read, like, I don't know, Brad Wilcox gave a really good talk at BYU about grace. And anyways, I just think that all of us are going to be standing there at the judgment bar saying, I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
And Jesus standing there going, no, it's okay. This is why I died. I died for you too. And for that and all those things.
And I also feel like, though, hopefully we're standing there realizing how worthy we were, like that we couldn't see that we were worthy. Like there aren't all these things we need to be doing. We don't have to check all of these boxes. Like, we don't have to. We were created to do different things. We don't have to fit every single one of them. Like, that's not the intention. We don't have the emotional and or physical capacity to do it all. But yet we need to lean into the things that we feel called to do in this life. I believe that whether you believe in a God or a divine being or just the universe, whatever it is you believe in, like, you are called to do something. And when you lean into that, that is where your joy and your grace lies. One of the things I was thinking about, you said, is especially in our church, we believe in an eternal, right? It's an eternal marriage. It's forever. It's not just here on earth. And so we get so stuck on that fact that, well, I committed for forever. And I committed to this for forever. And I always tell people, I'm like, you know what? Because they're like, well, now you're divorced. And so what does that mean? Is your daughter still going to be with you? Don't you need to, like, reestablish your family? I'm like, no, this is my family now. My ex-husband is going to be with me in the afterlife, because whatever that looks like, because he's my daughter's father and we are friends and relationships will go with us. Like, if we take anything from this world, it's these relationships. And I can't imagine that because he came out as gay and decided to live true to who he was, that he's not going to be with me anymore. And that's not fair to me. And that's not fair to my daughter. And that's not fair to him. Like, I don't believe that. And so, yes, while we broke that covenant, while we didn't stay in our marriage, there's still, there's a plan for us. Yeah. And I don't know that plan and I don't have to. I know I sit here to love people and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to love people and help them love themselves.
Amen. I mean, I think that sometimes that unrighteous judgment comes from us trying to figure out what it's going to look like after this life and what that plan is really going to be like. And the reality is none of us actually know. We're all just here to do our best and to love each other. So let's just stick with that.
Yes.
How, you know, like, just take all that other stuff off your plate, like, live authentically, live in a way that, you know, it's like, cause like in our church, there's this laundry list of checklists of things, right? Yeah. That are like what we're supposed to be doing. And it's like, I do not have bandwidth to do family history. I do not have bandwidth to do, you know, it's like all those different things that are just like, okay, those in the end, do not pertain to my salvation anyways.
No.
And so I just got to do my best and do those things in their seasons and whatever it is that it takes to for me to feel like, okay, you know what? I want to do this now. And right now I'm best served by taking care of my children and doing this podcast and serving my husband, like for me. And so if that's what I'm here to do for right now, that's what I'm going to do. And whatever comes the next season, then I'll do that too. It's just being willing to listen to that inspiration of what is in your heart telling you, what is your heart telling you? What is the spirit telling you? You know, whatever it is that you feel guided to do, that's what you need to do.
And that's where I always come back to the fact that you need to know who you are. You need to know who you are and what it is you want. And the more you listen to yourself telling you that, I believe the more in tune you are with the Holy Ghost, with God, with the divine creator, with the universe, the more you understand what it is you can do and how you can show up, and you can let go of all of those other things. Somebody else is good at those. Somebody else is taking care of them. And you need to lean into what it is you hear for yourself is right for you.
I love that. I love it. Awesome. Jessica, I really love this conversation. I think I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. This is fun. But so tell us what's coming up next for you. What are you working on right now?
Yeah. So right now, my main focus is I work a lot with women. We do help a few men in those things, but I have my podcast with my husband and ex-husband that we share all of our stories. Great way to connect for anybody. And while your story is probably not the same as ours, it's still the fundamentals of getting you to think about your relationships and your life in a new way that is where the power I've found of that comes from. But I also have a group of women that I do. It's basically group coaching. It's a course, but it's, so you do the course on your own, but we have weekly coaching calls and where we connect and get to support each other and uplift each other. And that's really what I'm leaning into. I do have, free classes that I teach. I'm actually going to be switching, I think, to doing those just once a month, but you can find those. They're free. They're an hour long. And it's a great way to understand how you can be bold in your life, how you can take bold action. And I give you three things to help you take bold action and stay true to who you are. And actually, I think I call it bold boundaries to stay true to who you are, to reclaim your sense of self. And that's really what it comes down to. We lose ourselves so often. And it's like, people are like, well, I like doing this. And I'm like, I understand that. But can you still do that? Like right now at this point in your life, what brings you joy? So anyway, we get you back to connecting with yourself. And those are a great place to start if you're looking to connect with me. We're on Instagram at Husband Law. Our podcast is called Husband Law. You can find it on any podcasting platform.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jessica. I will
make sure to put that
in the show notes as well. And everybody listening, go check that out. Thank you so much for being here. I just really appreciate talking to you. You're awesome. So thank you so much for coming on this show.
Likewise. Thank you.
Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss the next episode with Jackie Bailey, where we discuss how to empower kids with powerful communication skills to be able to use their voices powerfully and effectively. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Please download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. Take a screenshot and tag me in a post about your experience with any questions you'd like me to answer on the show for a mention on the podcast. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Leadership Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember Mother Teresa once said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.